Hi, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. This Saturday, we'll have another look at the unusual and unlikely stories that don't make the front pages here in the Czech Republic. That's with Magazine. We visit the central Bohemian town of Mělník, famous for its wine, in the latest travel tip. And our series looking back at 80 years of Radio Prague comes to an end with a look at links between India and Czechoslovakia, both before and after the Second World War. But first, here's Daniela Lazarova with this month's edition of Magazine.
A Czech helicopter pilot caused a stir in a small town in neighboring Slovakia when he landed in a nearby field, rolled his helicopter to the local petrol station and filled his tank before flying off. The incident happened in the town of Valaská and made the evening news on Slovakia's Markiza TV, thanks to the fact that dumbfounded drivers recorded the incident on their mobile phones. The Czech news site Novinky.cz managed to trace the pilot who confirmed the incident. "I needed fuel and the airfield was too far away. It's not something that happens a lot, but in an emergency it is possible to use regular fuel if you have the right additives. I warned the station's employees in advance about what I needed to do, and there was no problem or threat to public safety," the pilot told Novinky. The news site says that there is an increased interest among affluent Czechs in small helicopters and light planes, which are a fast and efficient means of transport. That claim is confirmed by another story that has made Czech headlines. The story of a 45-year-old locksmith from a small Czech village who built a plane in his spare time so as not to have to spend 40 minutes driving to work. He spent 2 years building his ultralight plane Vampira based on the US Mini Max design. The plane has an open cockpit and a three-cylinder engine going at a maximum speed of 146 kilometers per hour. Even so, it has cut František Hadrava's morning trip to work by a half. The locksmith, who works at a small factory making machine tools for the forestry industry in Čkyně, has become a local attraction. Every morning he lands on a nearby meadow and rolls the plane to the factory's parking lot for employees. After work, he'll roll it back and fly off to his home, which is now conveniently just 7 minutes away. And speaking of various means of transport, another unexpected sight you may see on Czech roads and further afield is the so-called tandem or twin bike. If you do see it, steer clear of it. Not everyone has mastered the art. Novinky reports that two Czechs riding a twin bike in Bratislava lost control and crashed into a parked Mercedes. Luckily, the damage was only around 100 euros. Famous Czech-born shoe magnate Tomáš Baťa, who established one of the world's biggest footwear companies, starting with a small enterprise in Zlín in 1894, is one of the most respected industrialists in the country's history. Ahead of his time, Baťa invested not only into his shoe factory, which started out with 120 employees, but into their well-being, building above-standard housing for them in the town of Zlín, and even establishing nurseries for their children. His employees were seen as having a privileged position and people aspired to work in his firm. As a result, he has become something of a legend in Czech history, and the standard of care he provided for his employees still evokes respect. Last week, a number of companies in the town of Zlín featured Baťa's menu in their canteens. Employees were reportedly delighted with the idea, since it meant a a lot of beef steaks and beef in many other variations. Bhatia's cooks reportedly used beef a lot. It was cheap and Bhatia needed cattle hide for his footwear production. A present-day employee who tasted Bhatia's Vienna beefsteak was ecstatic about his new canteen experience, saying the food was just like his mother and grandmother used to make. Well, it could be bosses are having second thoughts about the wisdom of bringing back Bhatia's menu. Czech archaeologists are excited about a recent find near Brno, where a team of workers uncovered what they believe to be one of the oldest ornaments found in Europe. They discovered 24 mollusk shells and bits of shells that appear to have been part of a necklace. The head of the project, Petr Škrdla, from the Czech Academy of Sciences, says there is no doubt they were part of an ornament. They were cut, perforated, and there are remains of red paint on them. From the first tests conducted, we believe they came from the Vienna Basin, located some 30 kilometers away, he says. Further tests are now being conducted on the artifacts, but if the team's assumption proves correct, the pieces of necklace uncovered would be 43,000 years old. Interest in the Czech Olympics house in Rio surpassed all expectations, according to the head of the Czech Olympics Committee, Jiří Gejval. We expected around 20,000 visitors, and even that was considered an ambitious goal. In reality, the Czech Olympics house had over double that number, Gejval says. According to the project manager of the Czech Olympics house, Blanka Konečná, the crowds were attracted by Czech beer, Emil Zátopek's electric-powered life size legs created by artist David Černý, and scooters, which became an instant hit with both children and adults. I think we really left our mark in Rio, Gejval said.
Magazine was written and presented by Daniela Lazarova. Now Dominic Yoon paints a word picture of the town of Mělník. That's with his latest travel tip.
Mělník is a small town just 30 kilometers north of Prague, situated at the point where the Vltava flows into the mighty Elbe River. It's the kind of place a visitor can easily pass through without actually seeing or get the wrong impression from a mere cursory glance. On the banks of the river, just north of the town, is a huge freight shipping port full of containers. Beyond that lie the huge chimneys of the Mělník power station. Exiting the town's train station, one might also get the sense that there isn't much to this place. Rows of beige, somewhat derelict-looking industrial buildings. Not far from that is a huge sugar factory. The effect of all this may seem a little bit off-putting, but one shouldn't be dissuaded, for there is far more than first meets the eye in Mělník. The main sight is the Baroque-era Mělník Chateau, which towers over the Elbe, framed on two sides by a steep bank of vineyards descending down to the river. As in nearby Roudnice nad Labem, the chateau has been returned to the Lobkowicz family descendants after having been seized by the communists in 1948. And the chateau is also home to some wine cellars open to the public. All around the small town, one can see wine stores and wine bars, one next to the other. For Mělník may be even more wine-obsessed than Roudnice. Indeed, from the 16th to the 18th of September, the town celebrates the grape harvest with the annual Mělnické vinobraní 2016. It's 3 days of outdoor music, theatre and plenty of wine drinking held in the town centre. And if that isn't all, there's also a wine tasting day every August, in which winemakers offer the public the chance to taste their latest vintages. not to mention a wine night held every April, and a welcoming of Advent event in November, naturally also accompanied by wine drinking. The town also offers a climb up to the St. Peter and St. Paul's Church Tower with its fantastic view of the distant landscape and also the confluence of the Vltava and Elbe right below the vineyards. The centre features a number of charming winding alleys, and right beneath the town square is a deep 14th century stone well surrounded by a number of underground tunnels, which is open to the public. One might often wonder, visiting towns and cities across the Czech Republic, if most of the attraction comes from the architecture of the long past Austro-Hungarian Empire era. But just outside Mělník's old town, one can find a fascinating ring of brutalist architecture. Alas, it's in rather poor shape, but with some restoration, there's clear potential for some amazing architectural juxtaposition here. Add to that a large number of examples of functionalist architecture, from houses lining the streets to the town's impressive Masaryk Cultural Centre, and even the interestingly cube-shaped bus terminal building. This mix of old and new architecture, coupled with all the oddities like the power station and sugar factory, give Mělník an endearingly quirky feel. There are coypus, river rats, living in a pond right next to the bus station. Oh, and next to that is a heliport. Town folk also like to stage outdoor recreations of medieval fairy tales as part of the Bitva na Mělníku event, with knights of wine slaying evil demons. The Mělník Knights stage events, featuring battle recreations and stories, throughout the year, and not just in the town, but as far afield as Germany. Mělník is a perfect antidote to busy, bustling Prague. There's a regular direct bus route from the capital. It's something of an oddball adventure, but it's well worth visiting.
Thank you for that, Dominic Yoon. In this, the last programme in our series to mark Radio Prague's 80th birthday, we travel eastwards, looking at links between India and Czechoslovakia, both before and after the Second World War, as captured in our archives. In the 1920s and 30s, cultural links were strong, despite the huge differences and distance between the two countries. And many of these links survived, even in the time of the Cold War. David Vaughan has more.
A few years ago, not long before his death in 2012, I had the chance to interview Professor Dušan Zbavitel, who during the communist period probably did more than anyone else to keep alive the tradition of Indian studies in Czechoslovakia. He reminded me just how far back Czech-Indian links go.
The knowledge of Indian languages is very, very old in Czech countries. For instance, some so-called enlighteners of the beginning of the 19th century knew and studied Sanskrit. Dobrovsky, Jungmann, and other personalities considered it a duty to get acquainted with Sanskrit. So the tradition of the interest in India was in our country very old and very vivid. I don't know what was the reason of this, nobody knows, but we consider it that India was very sympathetic for Czech people as a country under a foreign rule. It was English colony until 1947, and Czech was still the First World War under Austria-Hungary, so there were these mutual sympathies, yeah? And our people also very much followed the fight of India for freedom, for political freedom.
The father of Indian studies in Prague was Vincenz Lesný, who in the first half of the 20th century built up the study of Indian languages at the Charles University, along with Moritz Vinternitz from Prague's German University. Lesný and Vinternitz were invited to India to lecture at the Vishwa Bharati University that had been set up by the great Bengali poet Rabindranath Tagore. Lesný was also responsible for two visits that Tagore paid to Prague in the 1920s. Among the many Czechs who went to hear him speak was the composer Leoš Janáček. Dušan Zbavitel again talking to Radio Prague in 2011.
Janáček wrote at that time for our Lidové noviny such a column as he used to do, in which he put down the intonation of Tagore's recitation of Bengali poetry.
Tagore's language inspired Janáček to compose one of his best-known choral pieces, Potulný šílenec, The Wandering Madman, for male choir and soprano solo, which puts a story from Tagore's book, The Gardener, to music. Rabindranath Tagore's visits to Prague came too early for his voice to be recorded in our archives, but the poet does turn up again, albeit indirectly, a few years later. On Christmas Eve 1937, the celebrated Czech writer Karel Čapek sent a message over the airwaves to Tagore in Shantiniketan in Bengal, and at the same time, the inventor of the arc lamp, František Křižík, sent a message to Einstein in Princeton, a gesture of solidarity among democratic nations, all broadcast live to Czechoslovak radio listeners. This is the only surviving recording that features Čapek's voice.
All Czechoslovak stations, calling British India, Shantiniketan University. Karel Čapek is addressing a message of goodwill and understanding to Rabindranath Tagore, Shantiniketan.
Mis Tagore, harmonický hlas ze východu, zdravíme vás ve vašem Shantiniketanu. Zdravíme vás z Československa, kde nyní padá sníh.
To you who are the harmonious voice of the East, we send our greetings to Shantiniketan. We send our greetings from Czechoslovakia, where the snow is already falling, from an anxious Europe in the Western world, where even the most highly developed nations are unable to shake each other's hands as brothers would. Regardless of the great distance between our countries, however, we stretch out our hands in brotherly love to you, the poet of wisdom, to you, quiet Shantiniketan, to you, great India, to you, mighty Asia, even to this Asia which is now being destroyed by arms discovered by the West. At this very moment when cannons are roaring against the east and west of our common continent, our Western democracy feebly calls out to you at the turning point of the year. Long live the world, but let it be a world of equal and free people.
We now jump forward two decades to 1957, when India had already been independent for a decade and Czechoslovakia was firmly under the Soviet sphere of influence.
Vážení poslucháči, o niekoľko minút bude tu vo výstavnej sieni na Old Mill Road v New Delhi slávnostné otvorenie výstavy, ktorú poriada Indicko-Československá spoločnosť.
Our archives include a recording from New Delhi, from just before the end of 1957. Two of my journalism students from the Anglo-American University, Kristina Zagordayeva and Valentina Pšeničková, chose to look at the recording as part of their History of Journalism course.
My name is Kristina Zagordayeva. I was analyzing this recording in September 1957. Czechoslovakia and India set a quite extended trade agreement, according to which they were cooperating on many issues. And they set an exhibition, Indian government and the Indo-Czechoslovak Association, they set an exhibition in New Delhi about how Czechoslovakia perceives Indian identity.
We hope to be able to present to you and to the citizens of Delhi an idea of the interest that has been evinced in Czechoslovakia in this country of ours.
Valentina, who's actually talking on the recording?
There's the chairman of the Czechoslovak Indo company, Krishna Rao. And then you have the unknown woman. I had some tips who she could be, but it turned out it's not her.
The exhibition has been arranged under the title India in Czechoslovakia. And I sincerely believe that those sober documentary photographs will show you, at least to some extent, how the Indian philosophy, literature, and art are deeply appreciated in my country. The Czech and Slovak translations of Indian literature are a part of all our libraries. The exhibitions of classical and modern Indian art are visited by tens of thousands of people of our country. All the performances of dance and musical ensembles visiting Czechoslovakia are always sold out long in advance.
Then we have the...
Minister of Information and Broadcasting.
When I was a student in Europe, I had the occasion to visit once or twice the beautiful country of Czechoslovakia. Just as to large numbers of people in Czechoslovakia or other European countries, India is something very distant and very vague. So it is possible that to a large number of people in this country, Czechoslovakia must be something just on the map. But let me tell my friends in India that Czechoslovakia is one of the most forward and one of the most dynamic centers in Europe that I ever saw. There is no doubt that even before the last war, it was a great intellectual and cultural center.
Did you manage to get a bit of background context into the relationship between India and the countries of the Soviet bloc at the time?
After gaining independence from the British Empire in 1947, they finally established diplomatic relationships, and Czechoslovakia was one of the first countries who would have made this diplomatic agreements. They opened their embassies. And this was quite a sentimental thing for Indians and Czechoslovaks because they were mostly cooperating and united by this feeling of being one country oppressed by another. And especially this trade agreement of 1957 was one of the most important things in re-establishing those close ties between the countries.
And this recording, which you chose almost by chance from the Czech radio archive, it takes us back to a completely forgotten event 59 years ago. Did you feel it shed some light on the time or on the period of the Cold War or the history of Czechoslovak-Indian relations, or did you really feel it probably would be quite happy just to left it there in the archives and it's not particularly relevant?
You know, it was just speeches. We couldn't get to know something new from this. For me, it was more interesting to see that India was one of the proponents of non-alignment movement at the time, at the rise of the Cold War, and they started cooperating with Czechoslovakia, a really communist state, and they were cooperating on many issues. And it's interesting that it went unnoticed that the clearly communist state is cooperating with the non-alignment movement, and it's partly they're supporting this communist state. But yeah, it was interesting.
Today, the Czech Republic is able to draw from a history of warm relations with India, which span both the era of communism and the period between the wars. There is little evidence today of the depth of empathy that so much characterized the visits of Rabindranath Tagore to Prague nearly a century ago, or even at the time when India won independence in 1947. But as trading partners, the two countries are certainly beginning to rediscover their common interests and history.
And as I said earlier, that was the last program in our series marking Radio Prague's 80th birthday. Next Wednesday is the actual 80th anniversary of Radio Prague's first ever broadcast back in 1936. And on that day, we'll take a special look forward at what the future holds for public radio, and we hope you can join us for that. If you've got any comments about today's program here on Radio Prague, do please get in touch. Contact us by email at english@radio.cz or via Facebook or via Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.